This is WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
This morning, we'll be talking lawns and gardens, and with us today in studio, we have Master Gardener Bill Bryson. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I am doing good. That last commercial reminded me, you know, this time of year, and also, really, I guess, the beginning of spring, you hear a lot of commercials for things like lawnmowers, too. And I don't know, they're usually on sale this time of year.
Sure.
And then in spring, you usually hear about them on sale again, it seems like.
That's right. They want to get you prepared by the time it comes time next spring to have your lawn mowed.
That's right. Does it really matter what type of mower you have? I'm curious because you do hear about all these different types of mowers these days.
You know, you're a younger man than me, but you probably do remember the push mowers with real rotary type, and it would blow the grass clippings up on you, and we'd have to go out and push it and really push it hard to get it to cut through that tall grass. But we've made improvements now. You know, I think with lawnmowers, that when people are considering buying a lawnmower, one of the things I'd urge them to do, you know, if you have a small yard, not very big at all, you probably don't need a big zero turn, 52-inch zero turn. We have a riding mower at our house, but we also have a push mower. My wife loves to do the push mower in the backyard. Gives her good exercise. She enjoys that. But one of the things I would say to you when you were talking about, like now, why are they selling the lawnmowers and pushing lawnmowers and what have you, this is a great time as the season winds down to get your lawnmower in for servicing, get the oil changed, get everything checked. One of the important things about your grass is keeping those blades sharp. Especially if you have a zoysia or a Bermuda grass, those blades will get dull faster than they will with fescue. But if you can look at your grass after you cut it and you look at the tops of the blades and you see it's tearing it and not really cutting it smoothly, that's a good indicator you need to probably go and get those sharpened or sharpen them yourself. A lot of people do that themselves. But I know you can take them to the lawnmower places and they'll sharpen them up pretty quickly and easily for you. And it's always better to do it now or through the winter than to wait till February or March of next year, because everybody in the world is trying to get that done at the same time. And a lot of places give you discounts to go ahead and do it now as opposed to waiting.
I know a lot of people throughout the year, they'll mow their grass too short, thinking, well, this is going to save me from mowing again next week, but it doesn't really do that.
It doesn't. And if you have fescue again, you want to try to leave that a little longer. Zoysia and Bermuda, of course, loves to be cut short. And this time of year, as the Bermuda and the warm season grasses are slowing down, starting to turn brown as they usually do, it's a good time to mow it even just a little bit closer, just so it's ready to go and it works out better. Now, your fescue, you want to leave that long. But you're right. You see people go a month or so without mowing the grass and then they shave it. Well, sometimes that distresses the grass. You've cut off too much and there's not enough green above the ground to support with the roots to support it, to do the chlorophyll and run it back and forth and get the nutrients. And so you can distress the grass in your lawn pretty quickly that way if you don't. The other thing is it will be thicker if you, like fescue, you won't have as many weeds get in the ground. When you expose bare dirt and what have you, that's when the weeds move in, and now you're fighting the weeds too and the grass.
And speaking of weeds, I was driving through one of the many perfect neighborhoods we have in Murfreesboro and noticed, you know, just about every house had that beautiful grass that they bring in on truck beds and roll out into the yard. And notice that weeds do not discriminate.
Instant gratification grass. That's
minus
right.
Those weeds that still come up.
It doesn't matter. You're right. We're still going to have those. The birds spread them and the wind spreads them and the seeds get blown around. So we still have that. But you can do a lot of preventative maintenance in the spring and fall. Right now is a good time to put out the pre-emerge to get that, to make sure those seeds that are in the ground will not come up and sprout next season.
I think my pet peeve, more than grass, is probably your landscaping. And when I start to see weeds coming up in my landscaping, it drives me crazy.
It does. It's hard to not have that happen. Mulching, of course, is always one of the great ways to keep that down, because the seeds will fall on that inch mulch, never touch dirt, and normally it won't sprout and germinate. But mulching is good. This is a great time to get in there. especially if we get rain like we're supposed to the next couple of days, will be nice. It'll soften things up, and you can get in there and weed pretty easily, and then put your mulch down, have it ready for spring next year when it comes back.
So would this be a good time to take some of that old mulch up and put down some type of fabric barrier over the ground right where you have the landscaping?
If you want to put down fabric barrier, I think that's something you sure can consider. Mulch works as a natural fabric barrier. So if you'll get it on there thick enough, and when I say thick enough, 2 to 3 inches, you probably won't need to have the fabric barrier. Sometimes the fabric barrier can be a pain, because sometimes the weeds come up through the fabric barrier, and now you're fighting trying to get it out of that fabric without tearing everything up. But fabric barrier is a good way. If you can get all the grass moved out of it, the weeds out of it, pull the mulch back as best you can, put that fabric barrier down, cut it around your plants so that you have openings for those, whether it be a rose bush or boxwood or something else, and then put that mulch back on top of it. And again, try to get it 2.5-3 inches thick in there. The mulch is great for the soil because it starts to break down. It starts to dissolve into the soil. It keeps the soil loose. We have that clay soil here in Middle Tennessee, and all of those organic nutrients that the compost happens when the mulch starts to break down is good for the soil. So you're just putting that back on top, creating a new barrier for the weeds not to hopefully come in. And then also, when weeds sprout in that mulch, it's just easy. You just reach over and pull it out, and it comes out so easily. It can't really get established.
I wonder when commercial ground barrier became a thing, because, you know, I was reading somewhere talking about how potato sacks were used by some people who wanted the perfect lawn back in the 50s. So I'm curious, when in the world did they start manufacturing actual ground covering that was some type of fabric?
I don't know the answer to that. It's a good one. Maybe the website at TennesseeHort.org would give us that information, or you can call your ag agent. I'm sure they might be able to be more familiar with that. But I'm assuming it came out of the nursery industry. You see it used tremendously with the nursery industry, and a lot of places who will have the hoop houses, that I call it, that they grow things in almost year-round now because they can control the environment, keep weeds down and what have you. A lot of those 5-gallon pots of boxwoods and other plants that you go and buy at the nursery, they'll just be sitting above ground in those 5-gallon or 3-gallon pots. Well, it was a way to keep keep it from getting muddy at the same time, because they're watering frequently, as well as keeping the down. So my hunch is it may have been through the nursery industry that started that.
I'm curious, when somebody buys a new house, you know, there's fewer and fewer neighborhoods now that have mature trees, but when somebody buys a house, how hard is it to transfer and put in a tree that's already been around for, you know, let's say 5 to 7 years or so?
Tell me again, transferring from one house to another, or are you talking about just planting a newly bought tree?
Let's say the house you just sold, the neighbor or the person you sell it to says, you know, I'm okay with you digging up that tree in the front yard. You can have it, and then you transport it over to the new house and dig a hole, put it in.
I got you now. Good question. There are certain times of year that's a lot better for the tree, and for you too. Our high heat in the summer is not a good time to transplant trees. Early spring, now going into fall, even further, another month or two, is a great time as the trees start to drop their leaves and they become dormant. You also don't want to try to, when I said it's easier on you, if you try to plant that tree in the summer, and that doesn't mean you can't be successful, you're going to have a harder time digging the hole. You may have to have some help digging that hole, because it might be like digging in the parking lot out here. But if you get that hole dug, you want to dig the hole, wet it in really well. I always say, take that hole freshly dug before you put the tree in it, fill it full of water, and let it kind of just soak into that surrounding area before you ever put the tree in it. And then move the tree. And you can dig those. You want to try to, again, size, I can't visually tell you here, but size is important. From, you may need additional help from somebody, an arborist or whatever, if it's a massive size of a tree. You don't want to move a root ball in the summer also, because the soil is so dry around that root ball. If you pull all of that soil off, you now have a bare root tree, and its chances of survival are not going to be as good. But when you do move it, if especially in the fall and early spring like now, your success rate is great. Go ahead, wet that soil in again, put the tree in, mulch around it so it's going to hold moisture around it. The other thing we do a lot is take 5-gallon buckets. You can get just about anywhere. You can get them at the donut shop because they get icing in the.
That's
in
right.
Them. They're great. A lot of them give them away. We drill little holes in the bottom of it. It's a 5-gallon bucket. Put that right there next to your tree with the little hole going towards the tree and fill it up every other day or two. And that will weep that water onto that tree root ball. And really, you don't have to then water every day and water the whole yard and water everything. You're being specific. But that's a great way to have the tree survive through the transplanting of that. But you can do it. When we moved from Nashville, you may remember I was involved with bonsai and had a lot of bonsai. I had 300 trees at one time. Well, when we sold our house, there were several things that I had in the ground that were growing on as bonsai, maple trees and some other things. And when we sold the house, we said, those don't go with the house. Those are my bonsai. So we dug them up and transplanted them. We had great. They're in our yard now. They're doing great there. So anyway, you can do it. You can do it. You just need some help. And yeah. I wouldn't do it alone, but I'd try to do it with a good friend that might offer you a free pizza or something. You can get away with it, getting their back to help you with that.
And by the way, for those listening, if you have any lawn or garden questions, you can text those to us right now, 615-893-1450. Again, 615-893-1450. Bill Bryson, Master Gardener, with us this morning. Have a couple of questions here already. This one says, good morning. I am a plant lover. Recently divorced from someone who had allergies, so now I can buy plants galore. It says, what plants would you suggest are the best for cleaning indoor air? It says, I went to the local nursery and asked, but the lady looked at me with a lot of confusion.
Well, cleaning indoor air, I'm stumped a little bit by the question as well. I'm not sure if this person may be talking about tropical plants, indoor plants, ficus, things like that, or what exactly they might mean. Plants are natural at helping the air anyway, because
like natural filters almost.
Give off the, you know, take in the carbon dioxide and give off oxygen. So we need those plants. It's one of those things I think that's difficult here. I know some information came recently that in Rutherford County we're losing 1,000 acres a month to development.
Wow.
Well, as you just said, we kind of clear cut all those trees and we clear cut all that growth. But I kind of would urge this person, if they have a chance, to go to the website. It's Tennessee Hort, and it's H-O-R-T, TNHort.org. And I bet there's a site, a page on there, because it is an unbelievably great site for information on indoor plants, if that's what they're interested in, and advice on that answer. I'm sorry, I'm not really familiar with that one.
Here's another one. It says, I am definitely going to start a garden next season. I have never had one before. Should I start with a 100-foot by 50-foot section in my backyard, or would it be better to make a box garden next to my patio? Man, 100-feet by 50-feet garden. That's a big garden.
That's a plot.
Yeah.
Well, that's official PLOT. That's a plot. Well, those two choices are awfully good, and it's nice that you have those choices. The large plot, I guess, would be more about what you're going to try to do with it. You know, with a plot that size, you can have a very, very good vegetable garden, and every one of your neighbors will love you because you'll be supplying them with vegetables and good things to eat throughout the year. The larger plot, if you're just diving into it, it really isn't any harder than the smaller area that you're talking about, other than just a little bit more time. But it's a great time right now to be thinking about where you want that garden and what you want that garden to be, whether you're going to grow vegetables or possibly fruit with orchard trees or something like that, or both. But right now in the fall, this is the perfect time to be thinking and planning that. And I'd suggest drawing it out on a piece of graph paper or a piece of paper and kind of planning. Do I want to grow corn? How much corn? How many tomatoes? How many of the different varieties, squash, do I want to put in? If that's the route you want to go, because then you'll be prepared next spring. The beds will be ready. We talked about this, I know, last month with building up possibly pressure-treated wood frame around the outside so that you can weed eat and mow right up to the edge of it. Getting your soil in depends. If you're going to do a little small plot, you can probably go to the box store and get you two or three bags of topsoil to put in, and you'll be good to go. But a 100-foot plot, you're probably going to have them bring a truck out and, yeah, and dump a load of it. But you'll be ready to go come next spring. And in the meantime, once you've got that plan drawn out or the thoughts drawn out on what you want drawn out on what you want to grow, now's the time to be ordering the seeds. It's a perfect time to be going ahead and ordering the seeds from the seed catalogs. Trust me, all you got to do is type in garden seeds and you'll get all kinds of possibilities. And once you get their catalogs, you'll be on that catalog list forever and ever. And right now is the time you'll start getting them automatically in the mail if you have signed up, because people do plan ahead. But that way you can have your seeds, you'll have everything ready to go. And regardless of when the last frost happens next spring, or whether you want to start in even before that with indoor start of your seedlings, you can definitely get a head start, have that ready to go, and work your plan and plan your work that way, and you'll be ready to go. But I congratulate you on having the opportunity to have that flexibility, and I think it's more about how much time do you want to spend. The larger will take a little bit more time, but once you get it planted, it really shouldn't take you more time than the small garden.
Now, as far as seeds, I know we have at the local library a seed catalog, basically a seed library within the Rutherford Gedding Library System.
I'll be darned. I didn't know that.
I believe it's at the Tech Center.
Oh, at the Tech Center.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And also with the seed choices and things like that, that Tennessee Hort site is great. The other is, I want to applaud a little bit and praise a little bit. We have several ag agents at the Rutherford County Agriculture Center that are just top-notch people and great people, and they know this area. They work in this county alone, and they know what will grow. They know how to advise you on what types of things to grow, what types of things probably won't do well, and that's one of those things that'll just make you frustrated. If you plant it and you don't have good success, then you say, oh, I'm not a gardener. No, it doesn't necessarily mean you're not a gardener. It just means we picked a plant that doesn't do well in this part of the country. It looked beautiful in the catalog, but it never told us in the catalog, well, this will grow well in Tennessee. But I advise you to give them a call at any time. They're great folks, and they're all about giving out information to help people be better gardeners and better maintainers of the land.
Pineapples and bananas, those are harder to grow here in Tennessee.
I think they are, but I've gone not too long ago up Bradeville, and their banana trees 10, 15 feet tall. Now, I haven't seen the bananas on them yet, but people do grow a lot of banana trees outside here.
You know, I just Googled best plants for clean air, and this one website popped up, and it's an article posted in July of this year talking about how NASA compiled a list of the best plants to clean the indoor air.
Oh, cool.
So there, if you Google best plants for indoor air, this article should pop up. But it talks about the spider plant, the snake plant, Peace lily. Aloe vera, Boston fern, English ivy. I mean, there's a lot of different plants here that you can have indoors in pots and stuff like that.
Oh, exactly. Well, great. I hope that person is still listening and we'll take a look at that. That's a great place to do that. Thanks, Scott.
And then here, another question. This one starts out probably a strange question. One that will probably show my age. As a little girl, my mother would put a long wall nail into our plants, and I remember watching her but never asked why. Would you possibly have the answer as to why she would put a long nail in the plants? And I wonder, when she says long wall nail, I don't know either.
I'm not familiar with that or what that might have been. That may have been something also that you might want to just Google and see if it comes up. I'd be surprised. I've yet to ask a question on Google that came back and said, I don't know.
Sorry, Bill.
Yeah.
Not today.
And yeah, try back tomorrow. But I'm sorry. I don't know any way to help on that.
I wonder if she means like how people put like a wooden stake in with the plant and then tie certain, you know, levels.
That's possible. And maybe if they're listening, they'll give us a little bit more information and check back in with us. That'd be
great.
We'll
have to Google wall nail and plants to see more about that.
All right.
Bill Bryson with us this morning. We're going to take a short break and we'll check on that traffic situation, and then we'll be right back. You're listening to WGNS again on this Thursday. Time right now is 8:39. Again, you can call in or text in, and feel free to text anything you'd like right now about lawns or gardens, any question you may have. 615-893-1450.
You know, gift cards are always the easiest gift. This is Peter Demas at Demas's Restaurant. We will buy gift cards and just kind of have them on hand. They're amazing gifts to give to teachers. If you want to give a gift at your workout groups, you know, you have a personal trainer, family members. It's great to give gifts for 16, 17, 18 years old who are just now beginning to date and they need to be able to have some place to take someone on a date to. Gift cards are always the easiest gift. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op. Please come and see us for all your gardening, home, and farm needs. We have a great selection of clothing, farm items, and also our wonderful gift department. Please come see us for all your gift items. And we also have local honey. And if you're interested in being a beekeeper, we do have supplies for that. We have from hives to suits to whatever you need to take care of those bees. We're located at 985 Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off of South Church.
We're excited to announce that Capstar Bank is now officially a division of Old National Bank. The friends you've made while banking right here over the years are still here, and so are those delicious, warm, homemade cookies. Everything you enjoyed about Capstar is still at Old National Bank.
In Murfreesboro at 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Come on over and enjoy warm cookies with friends while doing your banking at Old National Bank.
Old National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Bill Bryson in studio with us this morning talking lawns and gardens. If you have any lawn or garden related questions, feel free to text it in 615-893-1450. And for anybody wanting to learn more about gardening and they'd like to take a Master Gardener class, Bill, what do they need to do?
Well, now's a great time to do that. The Master Gardener program offers the certification through the UT Extension Office. Those classes start in January. They occur every Tuesday from 9 to 12, and it is an in-depth study for 14 weeks. You get classroom, you get lab experience in the demonstration gardens. We take some wonderful field trips. We had, I think, 32 master gardeners this past January that signed up and took the course, and hopefully have that many more come January. But now you can get your packet by calling the Rutherford County Extension Office and register. It is a great opportunity if you want to be more in-depth and more involved in learning about everything from water, soil, how to grow better plants, what plants to use, what plants not to use. But it is a great opportunity to be around like-minded people who also love plants and plant growing. I don't think we've had a meeting. We have monthly meetings out at the ag office, and it's rare to not have somebody bringing in extra plants that they had that they wanted to share, or extra tree cuttings or extra things and share. So it's a great opportunity for folks who are really wanting to get really involved with it. Now, the Master Gardeners, our job is to work between as a liaison between the ag agents and the community. And we do that on Saturday markets by offering information and answering questions like we do today on this show. But we do volunteer hours. And as an intern, I'm an intern until January when I'll get the official handshake and my badge that I've been looking forward to. We do 40 hours of community work. And it's an easy way. We can do it out at the demonstration gardens that are at the Ag Center, which right now are kind of ending. Everybody's cleaning up the gardens, getting them ready for winter, but we have a really nice grape orchard, a grape vineyard out there, and you can do time with that. Spending time on the Saturdays, we help with the Children's Discovery House with the the summer garden show that they do. And so it's a great way to get involved. Now, the Master Gardener program, again, is a little more in depth. It involves 14 weeks during 9 to 12 on Tuesdays. We just finished the smaller, shorter version called the Garden Basics Project, which we do every fall. And it's done in the evening from 6 to 8 p.m. And it's only 5 weeks, but you get great information too. And it may be an opportunity. You may want to wait till fall if you can't commit to the Master Gardener program that is a little more commitment come January.
Again, Bill Bryson with us. Our number 615-893-1450. Got a interesting text. They think it may be an answer to the previous text we got from somebody else about the nail going in the soil. And this person says, putting a nail in the soil is so that plants will have iron, is what they were thinking.
Well, and you and I discussed off air during the commercial break that I remember, now that we've talked about it, there were little lead nails that you would drive into, say, a wall, a brick wall, or what have you, that were used to guide clematis or any vining things like climbing roses and what have you. And that was my first thought when we talked about it. But the other may be a perfect way to get, a perfect answer. They were doing it to try to get iron into the soil.
And then somebody else also responded about the nail in the soil. This one says, over time, microorganisms, bacteria, and other microscopic life forms will feed on the nails. As those life forms produce waste, nails transition to carbon dioxide and ammonia. And the slow breakdown of nails is what makes them such a great source of slow-releasing nitrogen. And these are really thought out responses here.
That's a great response. Thank you for sending that information in to us. That's great.
And then this next text. Yes, sir, I am listening. And I believe it was to give the plants some sort of mineral. I guess that would go back to the iron.
Right.
I remember her always pressing them down, long 4-inch nails into every plant that we had.
Wow.
And then here's another text. I have a problem with water standing in my backyard. And I was told that there are some plants that could be placed there that would actually reduce the problem. Is this something I should do in the fall, or is this a springtime job?
I think fall or spring would be fine, early spring or fall. And I would, again, contact one of the fine agents out at the Ag Center and ask them for advice on what plants might be good. You know, a lot of times we think of willow trees. They're great lovers of damp feet and wet feet. But willows can also put out root systems that cause problems with clogging up your drainage systems and your...
So they have a big root system or what?
Oh, it's just vast how far roots will reach with willow trees. But they love the water. They love the dampness. That you can grow them in water. But I do think I'd recommend highly to check with the ag folks out at the Ag Center. And I know they'll be able to help you with that. It may be also a situation where you might want to consider putting in what's called a French drain. And a French drain is to dig a small trench. You fill it up with gravel. And possibly, if it's a bad enough problem where you really have a lot of standing water, a tube, you know, one of the black tubes that goes on top of that drain, cover it back over. You won't even see it in your lawn, but the water will easily go to that drain, and then you can
it's like preparing for a septic tank almost.
You can design it to run that water away from the area you want it to not be anymore. So that's a possibility, but again, Try the ag office out at John Rice Boulevard, and they will gladly help you.
Those willow trees, you know, I love, there's certain parts of Georgia and South Carolina. You see those a lot, Louisiana. Really, I love those trees.
They're majestic. They're beautiful, but you do have to watch the root system because they will. It's a very invasive root system, and before you know it, you can be having problems with your sewage and what have you, waste out of your house, those kinds of things, because they get in the cracks of the pipes and they will literally clog them up. So
don't want it next to a pool then, for sure.
Not
that
probably
cause problems.
Yeah.
Plus, man, those I can't imagine all those leaves and the branches.
Yeah,
and
right.
All that. Wow.
That's right.
Again, Bill Bryson with us this morning. If you have any questions, feel free to text those in, 615-893-1450. This one says, we bought our house a couple of years ago, and it was new at the time, and there were no trees and no bushes, and pretty rough looking, it says. It's about time that we possibly start over with some better bushes and some and actually plant some trees. What would you suggest as far as bushes and trees go that are easy to take care of? It says, I don't want to spend a lot of time doing lawn and garden work.
Well, I would hope that you might consider coming up with a plan. And when I say that is lay out where your house sits on the plot of ground that it sits on a piece of paper or graph paper. So you'll know the size of everything. And then at that time, you can decide how much of this do I want to tackle at once. Scott had mentioned earlier about the folks who are blessed to be able to get the sod farm to bring all the grass in, and all of a sudden tomorrow, today it's dirt, tomorrow it's beautiful grass. Some of us can do that all at once, and some of us can't. And having that graph will allow you to divide up the projects maybe into smaller bites that you don't feel like you are overwhelmed with having to do it all at once. And the other is, by having the graph, you will know, can I put in a tree that has a 40-foot canopy, or do I need to put a smaller tree like a crepe myrtle in that will give me some beauty and some aesthetic value, but not necessarily, you know, have a canopy that's 40 foot tall. You don't know whether you want a tree that is going to shed a lot of leaves. Again, some of our trees, you know, magnolia trees are one of my favorites, but their leaves for some people are just a pain because they just don't disintegrate, and you're constantly sweeping and cleaning those up, and they just don't break down like maple leaves would or some others. Willow oaks versus oak trees. Regular oak trees, as you know, the big ones with the big leaves. Willow oaks have willow type leaves, very narrow, very small, easy cleanup. When they do fall, it's easy to sweep up and you're usually pretty good there. But if you'll start with the big plants and get those in first, then you can start deciding where do I want flower beds, where do I want shrubbery beds, those kinds of things. And then I would encourage you to go to the local nursery. Or a big box store, either one, but a local nursery usually has more variety, I think. But go and look at those plants. Do I like azaleas? Do I not like azaleas? Do I like plants that are going to change during the seasons? In other words, the viburnums, which will give you the bright reds that we're seeing right now as a hedge. You know, you will see those plants that you like and you will migrate towards those, whether that be perennials or annuals or what have you. And then again, seek out the advice of the good folks at the Ag Center, and they can sure help you. If you take that plan in, I guarantee you the drawing of your house on that footprint, they can suggest good trees for you. Good trees for you and your neighbor, so that you're going to be a good neighbor and not be encroaching. And I know we have a gentleman in our neighborhood that lives next door to another gentleman, and unfortunately, the one gentleman's leaves blow all over the other gentleman. So the guy who has the tree doesn't rarely clean up anything. It's always the other guy. So I hate it for him, but that's the way it works sometimes. But you can work the plan then and have come up with a way. Easily, if you want to do it all at once, there's people that'll help you do that. But I think you'll have more fun and enjoy it better in the long run if you'll try to break it up in pieces, and that's an easy way to do that.
And you know, there are free apps and free things on websites out there where you can actually do the layout of your garden or your landscaping at no charge. You can, you know, move the plants around and kind of implement, well, this is the design I want to go with, and that helps out.
One of the things that I think happens a lot, and we do see this especially in Murfreesboro, we'll see people, they bought the house, they have a clean slate, and they go out and buy big trees and they plant them next to the house, and they don't look bad right now.
Yeah.
But those trees aren't full grown. And in 5-10 years, all of a sudden now they're encroaching on the house, or you have to take them out. Well, you spent 10 years with that tree trying to get it to be a part of your landscape, and now you're having to cut it out because it's encroaching on your house or tearing up the foundation or what have you. That type of planning ahead of time will help you greatly in picking plants that will stay and you'll be happy with.
You know, I bet every new homeowner, just about every new homeowner, has done something like that. that with their first house.
100%. It's just because you want to fill that space up. It's so blank and you need something and you want a buffer. And the next thing you know, you've stuck that plant there and it looks great right now. But again, 5 to 10 years from now, nobody told me it was going to be a 40-foot tree, right, 6 inches that's from the house.
Breaking our windows now.
Exactly.
This question says, we're trying to sell our home, and the outdoor problem is that most of my shrubs and bushes have dead spots in them. This happens randomly from year to year, but our realtor says it might hurt the sale. How do I reassure the realtor that this is a normal thing?
Well,
get a different realtor. No, I'm kidding.
I don't know about that part, but the dead growth in plants, I'm not sure it's a normal thing. Now, we do have this past year, especially with the drought conditions that we had, and some we had some loss of plants, coupled with a freeze from a couple years ago that were really damaging to trees and plants. But my suggestion would be, and I guess to help you make the sale of the house, if the person is looking at a lot of dead material, that's probably not a great incentive. Can you cut the dead parts out and still have something? Can you dig the plant up after you've cut the dead and maybe turn it so that the best part is facing the street? I'm just brainstorming with you here to help the situation. But normally, I would say in most cases, if you can take the dead out, I think the person is going to have a better visual of what's left behind and probably be more successful. But I without seeing a picture, it's hard for me to say what the situation.
You know what's funny? I always heard, for those who are trying to sell a house, if you paint your front door red, your house is going to sell a lot quicker. And I don't know what the deal is with that. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's one of those wives' tales that you hear.
Well, it may be just an attention grabber, and you look at it and say, hey, there's a house for sale. It's got a red door. I noticed it really quickly. I can't tell you that part, but but I do think cleaning up the yard as best you can and having it look neat, and even putting down fresh mulch sometimes, which is not a huge expense, but putting down fresh mulch makes it look fresh and clean and ready to go. And like you did when you clean the house up for the sale, you cleaned the windows, you cleaned maybe pressure wash the driveway. All of that was to give an appearance that everything looks great and happy. And that may be one of the suggestions.
You know, you mentioned that about, and I said a lot of first time homeowners that make that mistake, just like what you said, of planting a tree that grows too quickly or too large right next to the house. And I noticed one of the other things that you do see a lot of is that people will put landscaping in general way too close to the house. And why not just make it go out another 5-6 feet? It'll look better. It feels bigger. And it will probably help the foundation of your home and the pipes underneath it are going to it.
Another thing in connection with that is, normally on those plants, when you buy them, there will be a tag that will tell you needs full sun, part sun, total shade. Some plants are different about that. Trees are different about that. And you may glean a lot of information there on the average height is going to be 40 feet on this oak tree when it gets done. So you know, well, it's only 6 feet right now, but it looks great, but how long is it going to take? It won't. Yeah. It'll be there quickly. And moving it will be heartbreaking to you because of the investment you made, but it'll also be heartbreaking because now you've got to replace another tree and pay to have that dug out. And that's not sometimes an inexpensive thing.
When you know, those giant red oak trees that get, like, I don't know, 200 feet tall in California, things like that, could you actually plant one of those in Tennessee, and would it grow to that same extent?
I don't know that it would grow to the same extent. It obviously has a genetic makeup that wants it to grow large. But a lot of those trees that you see out there are growing in forests. So they have elevations that are different than what we have here. They get the cold, which is a deep, deep cold that we don't get here. But I would say it's going to grow large. I can't guarantee it's going to grow that big.
Yeah. Interesting. And I'm sure you can go online to see all different types of plants or call the Ag Center to learn about different trees that would grow good or not grow so good here in Tennessee.
The other thing is that uthort.org is a redone website, and it's amazing. You can go in and look at landscape material. You can look at orchards. Click on cherry trees. There's usually videos with each of the plants that are suggested to talk to you. Ag agent has recorded this to talk to you about what it should requirements will be, how it should grow, what things it might be best planted near, and things like that. And it's a great resource. It's all free at TennesseeHort.org.
That sounds great. Well, thank you for joining us. I think we got a lot of questions answered.
We did. And Scott, always thank you for the community work you and your dad do. And we're grateful to be a part of it here.
Well, it's fun. Now I feel like going outside and making a garden of some kind, growing a garden of some kind, hopefully. Hopefully
Thanks,
I can
Scott.
Do that.
You
Thanks
can.
For joining us. Bill Bryson with us this morning. And we'll post this on our website for you to listen to as a podcast as well in just a little while. Just go to WGNSradio.com and click on the podcast section. You're tuned to WGNS Murfreesboro. More news and information is coming up.